Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And okay, folks, those of you listening to this segment, by streaming WNYC online, your behavior is still perfectly legal. But if you wanted to pop open a new tab and stream a little broadcast TV, we have bad news. As you've been hearing, the Supreme Court ruled just this hour against the company Aereo, that service that basically lets you rent an antenna to then get broadcast television through your browser for a price. They also protected a lot of your cell phone data, did the justices, from the prying eyes of the police if they don't have a warrant to look at your digital life. So let's talk about today's rulings and a couple of others that have come down this week with Slate's Dahlia Lithwick. Hey, Dahlia, thanks for doing some of this Insta analysis with us.
Dubious whether it's going to be analysis, but yes, here I am.
Knowing your track record, I'm not very dubious. Cell phones. The Supreme Court rules that police generally may not, without a search warrant, search digital information on the cell phone seized from an individual who has been arrested. How many of you are now wiping your brow and going, whew? So this is in a situation where, say, someone is arrested for a traffic infraction, something even hypothetically that small, and then they can go look at everything that you have online?
That's right. And just, you know, for context, Brian, the folks who were worried about this case pointed out there are 12.2 million arrests made nationwide in 2012. You know, people who are stopped, you know, just this isn't tiny traffic citations, but this is, you know, arrests for completely trivial things. So 12.2 million people breathe a little easier knowing that just because the cops can stop you doesn't mean that it's open season on all of your cell phone data. This is a unanimous ruling.
Really?
So this is a big, big deal. Chief Justice John Roberts writing, these are two consolidated cases that come before the court. One comes up through Massachusetts, one through California. Lots of different details about what it was these guys were doing and what the police grabbed. But the upshot is that the court, in a very, very pro-privacy decision, says, you know what? Unless there are exigent circumstances, in other words, unless the cop is in fear for her life, your cell phone is not up for grabs. And that is just a huge, huge, big deal for privacy.
So does this say, in effect, that digital information is more like the stuff in your house than the stuff in your pocket? Because the police can go through your pockets, I believe, if you're arrested for just about anything, but they can't then go into your home unless they have a warrant.
Well, that's exactly right. And one of the three-judge panels in one of the cases that ends up before the court, one of the judges writes this. Today, many Americans store their most personal, quote, papers and effects, right? That's the language from the Fourth Amendment, in electronic format on a cell phone that's carried on the person. So I think, yes, the court imports the framers' idea that the stuff that you keep in your desk, in your diaries, the stuff that you keep hidden under your bed because it's so intimate and personal, has migrated onto your phone, and that, you know, for the police to say this is really no different from opening your glove box and checking for a gun is just a bridge too far. So, yes, I think the court is willing to say, and really does say in very, very strong terms today, that what you have on your phone is, in a deep sense, you know, so intimate, so personal, that the cops have to have a better reason to search it.
Another quote from the majority opinion, I guess, unanimous opinion. Modern cell phones are not just another technological convenience. With all they contain and all they may reveal, they hold for many Americans the privacies of life. So that's pretty sweeping. And this is all coming down very fast and just in the last few minutes. But I read that the court does not even permit warrantless searches that are related to the reasons for an arrest. So does that mean if, say, you're arrested for making a threatening phone call or tweet, they can't go on your phone at that moment?
That's right. I mean, the court is pretty clear to say the only justifiable police objective here is, you know, for the exigent safety of the arresting officer. So, you know, in these cases, in one case, you know, there was a gun found. There are, you know, often reasons that you want to be able to grab guns or, you know, a package of drugs lying around in the back seat of the car. But the cops say unless the officer is, you know, in fear that, you know, that the guy's phone is somehow going to signal his Confederates to come and, you know, swarm the car and beat up the cop. You know, that's an exigent circumstance. But barring that, it's not going to be a permissible search. And, you know, one of the things that was interesting, Brian, at oral argument was there was this question about whether you'd have the ability, as the cops were, you know, stopping you, to wipe your phone. In other words, to destroy evidence. And at least from my preliminary glance at the opinion, the Chief Justice says, you know, I'm not even sure that that was, you know, briefed well or argued well enough to believe that it's really a fear that you're going to be able to wipe your phone. So it really does look like this is limited to exigency. And I should point out, the cops could always, you know, do anything if there was an exigent circumstance. So this doesn't even actually move the bar that much.
You're listening to WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River, New York and New Jersey Public Radio. I'm Brian Lehrer with Slate's Supreme Court Watcher, Dahlia Lithwick, as we talk about the two decisions that came down today and some others from this end of the term week that have been coming down in the last few days. The other big one today, the Aereo case. The essence of the ruling, as far as I can tell, is that Aereo is equivalent to a cable company, not merely an equipment provider, when they take the broadcast signals from the over-the-air broadcast channels, not the cable channels, but the old television stations like channels 2, 4, 5, 7, 9, 11, 13 in New York, like those, and then basically sell them to us to look at on our browser at our convenience. What was the Aereo ruling?
So this is a 6-3 ruling. It's authored by Justice Stephen Breyer, and basically the court says, you know what? Cute little workaround, love the little antennas you're using to, you know, give to your subscribers and allow them to stream or store in the cloud broadcast television. Cute idea, totally illegal. The court just says, of course, this violates the copyright laws. And Justice Breyer is very careful, writing for the majority, to say this is a limited decision. It's a constrained decision. We don't want to, quote, discourage the emergence or use of different kinds of technology. One of the big concerns in this case was that if the court protected the broadcast networks and extended copyright laws to what Aereo was doing, that it was going to really squelch innovation and new technologies. So Breyer's trying to cabin this and say, hey, you know, keep on innovating. Don't worry about those of you who are worried about the impact on cloud computing. We're just saying that what Aereo is doing when they sell you this little antenna and they say, you know, we're not in effect stealing, this isn't a public performance for copyright purposes, that really does violate the copyright rules. And I should also say this is a huge blow to Aereo. In fact, I think the company has already issued a statement saying, you know, we're toast. There's nothing. We can't fix this. Our business model relies on this. And so this really is a big, big, big loss for Aereo.
Listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the various Supreme Court rulings of recent days as they're issuing their end-of-term decisions and opinions, 212-433-WNYC for your questions or comments for Dahlia Lithwick from Slate, 212-433-9692. Do you want to talk any more about the difference between this and a cable company or the lack of difference between this and a cable company? Was that key here?
It was key, and, you know, Aereo was arguing all along that what they were doing was just the same thing as selling rabbit ears. You know, they said they were looking at the copyright law. The copyright law regulates the transmission of any TV program, quote, to the public by the means of any device or process, whether the members of the public are capable of receiving the performance or display, receive it in the same place or in different places. So that was the law they were dealing with, and Aereo had said all along, this isn't a public broadcast. This is a private broadcast. Lots of different people, akin to putting rabbit ears up on your TV, are just watching a private broadcast. So this is not, in effect, stealing. And, you know, the company felt very, very strongly that this was well within the confines of copyright law. But the broadcaster has said all along that this is a public performance. And whether lots of people are individually receiving transmission individually on their little dime-sized aerial antenna is not the relevant question. I should also just tell you, Brian, that there's a dissent by Justice Scalia in the case where he says this is not a public performance because, quote, Aereo does not perform at all. And then he goes on to warn for the three dissenters in this case that the holding is going to, quote, sow confusion for years to come. So I think in a deep, deep way, if you look at actually this paired with the cell phone cases, this is really struggling with these ideas of emerging technologies. You know, one of the cell phone cases had to do with a flip phone, which we can't even remember anymore. But I think it's this very, very strange problem, Brian, of technology changing so fast. These justices, some of whom are in their 70s, one of whom is in her 80s, trying to wrap their heads around not just the new technologies, but the implications for the future. They have to not just imagine what is it that's going on today, but in a year, what is this going to both support and what is it going to quell in new technology? And so in both these cases, I think you're looking at the court really trying to both be responsive, but not to create rules that will in any way, squelch new innovation. It's an interesting moment for a court that is often accused of being behind the times.
Oh, Samuel Alito, Ruth Bader Ginsburg aren't digital natives? Huh. Jim in Manhattan, an Aereo subscriber. Is that right, Jim?
Yes, I'm an Aereo subscriber. I joined them after Time Warner cut off CBS. About 10 or 12 months ago. I like it. I'm sad to see it happen, mainly because of the monopoly that Time Warner has here in Manhattan. The biggest problem with cable is you're forced to take everything, to pay a large fee for everything they want to offer. A senator that I disagree with 90% of the time, John McCain, tried to make them sell packages 15 years ago, and they won't do it. Now Comcast is going to merge with Time Warner, and I will assure you if that goes through, your cable bill will go up.
Probably so, but the cable companies have to pay the networks for the right to sell us their content. What this case was about was that Aereo was just taking this off the air with their antennas and then selling it to you.
Well, unfortunately, you can't have an antenna anymore. And years ago, when they tried to get everyone to get HDTV, which was fine, they made you pay for, if you lived in a suburb, they made you pay for a little box so you could still get that
stuff. Can still do that.
I know, but to me, there's no difference between that and the fact that I'm paying Aereo $8 a month to give me something that I happen to think is better.
Right, I see. Interesting. Jim, thank you very much. So what happens to people like Jim now after this ruling? Dahlia, does Aereo just go away?
I think Aereo is at least saying initially they fold up their tents and go home. I think the court is trying to say we want to encourage all kinds of innovation, but not at the expense of every major broadcast network. I mean, the Disney, NBC, Fox, CBS, all of them hated this because, as you said, they weren't getting paid. Aereo was charging its subscribers $8 and paying nothing. The question is someone else going to come along with a better workaround? I should also say that the broadcasters in this case said, we're either going to have to stop doing what we do or build our own little antennas. So the broadcasters really did raise dire, dire threats about the business model. And I think it's interesting, you know, that the court is saying we're going to defer to the good old-fashioned broadcast networks, you know, decades after they've existed and be a little bit less mindful of Aereo's kind of clever workaround.
Now, let's see. My computer says this caller is David at Jones Beach. David, are you actually on Jones Beach?
I'm on the boardwalk as we speak. I'm right center in the whole place. You can see the flags and the water tower. Yes, I'm really on Jones Beach.
Streaming through your phone?
Streaming through my phone. Brian, my question is this. If I provided my own antenna and some box, like a sling box, to forward whatever was received over the antenna, is that legal?
Dahlia, do you know?
Well, I think as long as you have an antenna, you're fine. The problem was that Aereo was, you know, in this question of whether they were publicly broadcasting or doing individual private broadcasts, they got tagged for doing public broadcasts. So I think the problem was that Aereo's contention that what they were doing was just really this benign act of giving people the right to watch individual private broadcasts, that wasn't as benign as it looked. But can an individual...
Go ahead, Dahlia.
No, I was going to say, can an individual jigger a system to watch cable? Sure, that wasn't the issue. The issue was, does it violate the copyright, the federal copyright rule?
But, David, if you then invited a lot of people over to your house to watch this Slingbox-received, you know, TV programming, then you could get in trouble.
Oh, okay.
If you charge them, really, if you charge them.
Thanks.
And I would just add that lots and lots of people are going to come up with the next Aereo. You know, this is not by any means the end of it.
Yeah.
I think it's just the court setting a marker to say, don't be telling us these are private broadcasts.
By the way, our crack research team just Googled Aereo stock. Aereo is not a public company, so we couldn't find any Aereo stock results as a result of this ruling. But guess whose stock is way up at this hour?
Aereo?
CBS. Viacom, Disney, and of course they own NBC and ABC respectively. So that's, you know, maybe, who knows why they're up, but maybe they're up because of this. Matthew in Brooklyn calling in on the cell phone ruling. Hi, Matthew.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for taking my call.
Yep.
So a good friend of mine is a Virginia State Trooper, and he tells me stories all the time about how he will pull over people for texting and driving. They will say that they were not texting and driving, and he will then ask to see their phone so that he can see their text messages, and more likely than not, he sees the timestamp where they were texting and driving just when he thought they were. And so I'm curious if now, due to the new ruling, he wouldn't be allowed to do that anymore. In a case where the phone, you know, the act of texting and driving is illegal, and he would use the phone to prove that, are they now allowed to withhold the phone?
If I'm correct, and I want to be clear, I have not read the whole opinion yet, but if I'm correct and you cannot even search the phone for evidence of the crime that you are alleged to be committing, then no. I think that the only space the court made for searching the phone was, is there an exigent situation where the cop is in danger? So I think that, and I think Brian said this when he asked me the question, if we're correct, and I think we are, that the court didn't carve out an exception for checking the phone for evidence of the crime that is alleged to be going on, then I think that you can't do it. And, you know, that's going to be a huge blow to cops for not just the reasons you're citing, but all sorts of other reasons. This is a really, really important tool for law enforcement to be able to search your cell phone incident to arresting you for something else. The court just says, you know what, cell phones are different.
Matthew, thank you. And we got a tweet from a listener named William, who makes a really good point about the digital information on your cell phone not being available to search without a warrant. He says, it's private until that data leaves the privacy of your device onto the info superhighway, #NSA. So is there a boundary there that I don't know that the Supreme Court would have addressed in their ruling, but when it's on your phone, it's one thing. When it's elsewhere out there in the cloud, if they can access it through another device, basically, then they can look at it.
Right. I mean, one of the things that early reports on this case are saying is, how does this foreshadow what's going to come down the pike? We have all sorts of dueling rulings in the lower courts about privacy of your information and NSA surveillance. So there is this question, I think, about where does this telegraph the court is locating itself on this larger fight about your privacy and your information. And you can only look at that as tea leaves, but it is certainly, I think, the case that as the fight ramps up in the lower courts and in the appeals courts about the legality of those searches, what we're seeing from the court today is this incredibly privacy protective ruling, even, you know, in the face of strong, compelling government interests otherwise. So I think it's not unreasonable to say this is the court a little bit staking out a position about the fundamental privacy of your, you know, information that you keep on your phone. So it's not, I think it's not at all inaccurate to say this tells us a little something about where the justices' heads are at on this larger issue of privacy in a digital era.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, as we're talking about the Supreme Court rulings that have come down today and earlier this week with Dahlia Lithwick from Slate. There's this New Jersey gambling case, and I don't think it's at the top of anyone's list of monumental Supreme Court cases, but it's a local story for us with some interesting implications. And one thing you learn during these crazy Supreme Court cases is the distinction between an opinion and a decision. An opinion is when they rule in a case. A decision is about whether to even take a case, unless I reverse those. So here, the court issued a decision not to even take on whether New Jersey can allow sports gambling, like gambling on football. Did I get that right?
You got it. I mean, it is certainly the case that you could do an entire Law Review article on all the great stuff that the court is batting away in these weeks, the last weeks of the term, and it's hard to pay a lot of attention to them because the court is actually issuing opinions on substantive law. But it's a big, big deal that the court decides not to take the sports betting case out of New Jersey. Chris Christie was arguing that this is a states' rights proposition, that states, you know, should be allowed to get around the 1992 federal law that bans most states from sports betting. And I think, you know, this is a court that finds those states' rights, federalism, you know, state sovereignty and dignity arguments very attractive, but the court just batted it away and said that New Jersey's efforts, you know, even by way of state referendum to allow betting on sports events just goes away. And so, you know, query what happens going forward. I think there New Jersey may attempt to do this some other way, but the court has determined that it is not going to get involved.
And this was NJ versus the NFL. New Jersey wanted to implement gambling. The NFL did not. The NFL had won at the appellate level, but it was a split vote, which is why Jersey decided to take it to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court batted it away, as you say, wrong sport. I guess you can bat away a pass. A defender does that. So I guess it is a football reference. Big win for the NFL because they think that's going to corrupt the sport. They don't want betting on the NFL to be legal in the United States, even though it goes on everywhere. But is the court's decision not to hear the case effectively a win for one big corporation, meaning, you know, the monopoly National Football League, or does it set some legal precedent about whether gambling on sports is constitutional or not?
No, I think what it just says is the 1992 federal law controls, and New Jersey's effort to wait for it, do an end run around that is not gonna work. You know, the
end run.
Yeah, you like it.
Yep.
You know, New Jersey had lost twice in the federal court, so the court doesn't add anything by saying we're not going to hear this either. I should also point out it's not just the NFL. I think all of the sports leagues arrayed against New Jersey. They all argued, you know, that sports betting violates the integrity of the game. And also the Obama administration sided with the leagues to not give New Jersey a pass here. Some other states have been grandfathered in, notably Nevada. New Jersey was saying, wait, we wanted to be grandfathered in, too. The law had given them an opportunity to grandfather in Atlantic City. New Jersey had not taken it. So one of the things I think the courts had said is, you snooze, you lose. You had an opportunity to get out from under this. You chose not to. You can't kind of come around again now and say it's a state sovereignty issue.
Can I just linger on that Nevada reference for a moment? This 1990 federal law, if I have it right, barring sports gambling in everywhere that didn't already have it at the time, read Las Vegas. So that's kind of the state's rights issue here, right?
But I think so.
But I thought this court was pretty sympathetic to states wanting to opt out of certain parts of federal laws. Or is that only the case when it comes to Medicaid expansion?
Medicaid expansion and marijuana, I think, are the two. It's not just Nevada. I think I read that Delaware, there are some other states that are also grandfathered out of this 1992 law. But you're quite right. You know, this Supreme Court is as solicitous of states' rights arguments as any, you know, we've seen in decades. And so the idea that they're not open to a states' rights argument is certainly intriguing. As I said, I think that undergirding some of that is the fact that New Jersey did have an option to grandfather itself in and didn't avail itself of that option, so that may make it slightly less sympathetic to the court.
Last case, and we're going to give this short shrift, but they also ruled earlier this week on Monday on greenhouse gases and the EPA's ability to take action to regulate pollutants without the help of Congress. What happened there?
You know, one of the most interesting things about this case, Brian, is watching people try to figure out who really won this case. So at one level, it's a 5-4 decision authored by Justice Scalia, slightly constraining the EPA's regulatory powers in one small version of the Clean Air Act. But almost everyone, I think, has come round to the view that, in a sense, this is a 7-2 decision by the court that, notwithstanding that the EPA can't do exactly what it did in this case, which was rejigger some of the emissions levels that would get you covered for a permit for CO2 emissions. So the EPA probably shouldn't have rejiggered on its own. The court says this is a job for Congress, and that slightly constrains the EPA. But the fact is that what the court really did was uphold fundamentally the idea from the 2007 decision in Massachusetts versus EPA, that the EPA is allowed to regulate CO2 emissions, that this is off the table, and that's a big, big deal. So most of the environmental groups say 7-2, this was, even with Scalia writing in lots of snark in his opinion about, the excesses of the EPA, that this was probably a win for the EPA. At the margins, they lose a little bit of authority, but generally I think the consensus is that they came out winning because the court pretty much put the stamp on the idea that the EPA can regulate CO2 gas.
And maybe the big quote coming out of the opinions here is that Scalia says this allows the EPA to regulate 83% of greenhouse gas emissions as opposed to the 86% that they wanted. But we have to leave it there with Dahlia Lithwick. I guess we will have to tackle some of the other issues coming soon. Thanks for doing this quick blitz. You can now go running back to your computer to file for Slate.
Well done. Thank you for having me.
It's about that other kind of football that nobody cares about this week. Thank you very much.